As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Dress, the History of Fashion is a production of Dress Media. With over 8 billion people in the world, we all have one thing in common. Every day, we all get dressed.
Welcome to Dressed, the History of Fashion, a podcast where we explore the who, what, when of why we wear. We are fashion historians and your hosts, Abel Callahan
and Cassidy Zachary. Welcome, Dress listeners, to part two of our incredibly fascinating and insightful journey into the history and multicultural significance of nameplate jewelry with Isabel Flower and Marcel Rosa Salas, the women behind the Living Archive Project documenting the nameplate and the brilliant book, The Nameplate, Jewelry, Culture, and Identity.
On Tuesday, we discuss the inspiration behind the book and the ongoing project, as well as the nameplate's historical and multicultural significance. Today, we address the central role of nameplate jewelry in hip-hop culture, as well as its political and even controversial role in both sub- and mainstream cultural expressions. So, Marcel and Isabel, welcome back to Dressed.
There's a fantastic interview in the book with Professor Q about the history of and precedent for hip hop fashion and like all of the different influences that came to bear on the emergence of the nameplate as kind of like this central element, right, within hip hop style. Can you talk about some of those influences on nameplate culture, specifically in New York, and how it became inextricably linked to hip hop fashion?
Professor Q was so amazing and generous in sharing his perspective with us, which I think tied together a bunch of other observations we had made and conversations we had had. But I think that to zoom out for a moment, hip hop as established by Black and Puerto Rican youth in the Bronx in the 1970s, although, of course, there's conversations around like how do we pinpoint its exact origin, but a popular narrative of its origin is that timeline. Its founding pillars, DJing, MCing, breaking, and graffiti writing, all have at their core this really distinct importance of a singular identity and of a style. And I think like that idea of individual style, whether it's how you rap, how you move your body, how you dress, how you write your name, are all at the ethos, at the core ethos of what hip hop communicates and stands for. That in turn, as makes sense, is often communicated through customization. So Elena Romero, who's a historian and submitted her name belt to the book and was also one of the curators of the FIT Fresh Fly Fabulous show, spoke to us early in the project and also wrote in her book about hip hop fashion, how nameplate jewelry was a popular way just to show your name, like at that time, and communicate who you were. And that that aesthetic also caught on among the breakers of the 70s and early 80s, the B-boys and B-girls, who favored these like oversized single-plated gold necklaces that were either usually block capitals or designed in this Chinese calligraphy inspired font that's colloquially referred to as Kung Fu and was inspired by the Kung Fu action flicks that were popular at the time. People were going to Times Square to see them in the theaters there. And if you think about it, like that big style also makes sense because then it's literally just readable, like in a photo or like if you're dancing or something like that. So then at the same time, actually, Marcel, if you want to jump back in, I can pass off to you to talk about like truck jewelry. And also Professor Q mentions how there's all these really important points of intersection in everyday life that where people like literally just see each other and like learn of and copy each other's fashion.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that when you see, you know, people wearing Halloween costumes of like 80s hip hop style, or, you know, even some of the contemporary revivals of fashion, hip hop fashion today, you'll often see bamboo earrings, sort of big chunky jewelry. And that aesthetic tradition of adornment is known as truck jewelry. And nameplates are a part of that tradition, which has its roots in the influence that the narcotics industry had in shaping the authentic sensibilities of a lot of the rappers and other performers that were of coming up and coming of age in the early to mid 1980s. And this is a history that Professor Q is an expert in and shared with us specifically, you know, around the boom of crack cocaine and the money that was being generated from that industry, allowing, you know, narcotics dealers to buy these really intense pieces of jewelry as signs of status and economic standing and social power within their respective communities. And so we see, of course, that big kind of ostentatious bamboo hoops, rope chains, like Nefertiti pendants, again, that type of 80s, as you would say, New York hip hop jewelry aesthetic, nameplates, a particular style where we see double plated pendants. So it's that kind of like three dimensional style, diamond encrusted pendants, or plates of metal that are etched with diamond cuts to sort of give that luminosity and appearance of diamonds. That really became popular during that period and was also influenced by a whole host of intercultural interactions that were taking place, particularly in New York City, and that spread all over the country and the world. Professor Q talks a lot about in that interview about how African-American and Puerto Rican and West Indian communities were engaging and living in neighborhoods adjacent to and in some context mixed with Italian-Americans, where there was a cross-cultural a mixing of styles, whether that was the jumpsuit or the tank top and gold chains and nameplates. Nightlife, of course, plays a big part in the type of cross-cultural interactions that brought communities that were, you know, in New York City, pretty segregated from one another into a shared cultural space where people could see, oh, hey, that they're wearing this, that this community is wearing that. And that's how these types of hybrid forms of style are generated and born. Again, our story of nameplates and that truck jewelry tradition are very centered on New York, but we know that Texas and Los Angeles have a host of other different cultural influences that contribute to specific looks and feels of nameplates in those areas as well.
Yeah. And I'd also add one more thing. Like, I think Professor Q gives these really granular examples. I think the disco and nightlife moment in the 70s is really huge, but he also gives these very specific examples of Sicilian mob and narcotics dealing bosses meeting up with local dealers, and they're wearing their like off-duty clothes. They're wearing Fila track suits and like gold pinky rings, these Sicilian specific chain styles like Mariner links and Figaro with the two small links and the one longer link. And you can see like those exact aesthetics merging with a traditional oversized gold style that's perhaps more inspired by like Jamaican raga and dancehall. So there's these very pinpointable moments where you can see these styles converge. That's very cool. And then also by the end, well, actually the beginning of the 80s, but really taking shape by the end, you have television becoming really pivotal to how everything that Marcel just mentioned was communicated to not only the rest of the country, but the world. And I think it can't be underemphasized the importance of Video Music Box locally, but then like Rap City and Yo MTV Raps, MTV in general, and popularizing through the music video and also award shows and other visual dressing moments, how these styles were broadcasted to a global audience, and the rest is history.
Yeah. And I have to say that essay is so fantastic. I mean, this whole book is fantastic. It's so beautifully illustrated and it's populated with these wonderful, not only memories and stories from people who have nameplate jewelry, but also you have these longer form essays, one of which was written by a past dress guest and one of our dear friends of the show, Eric Darnell Pritchard. I can't say enough wonderful things about your book. And something multiple people refer to in their stories that accompany their pictures in the book is Carrie Bradshaw's now famous or infamous, depending on which perspective you have, nameplate. And this was, of course, a necklace that was worn in the hit TV show Sex and the City. And this is something that you directly researched and interrogated in your 2017 article, which was entitled Say My Name, Nameplate Jewelry and the Politics of Taste. And in this article, you discuss the show's role in bringing nameplate culture to the quote unquote mainstream. So what was the cost of that?
Thank you for posing that question. And I think we were very deliberate about not centering Sex and the City or Carrie Bradshaw in our book, even though it can't be denied the influence of that show and of her being styled with a nameplate necklace by Patricia Fields, who is a legendary New York City Lower East Side stylist, fashion designer, that has been interviewed talking about the influence of Black and Latinx communities in her exposure to nameplates and her influence in styling Carrie Bradshaw with a nameplate. But what's often left out of the story of Sex and City's influence on the nameplate is precisely that piece, is the teenagers, the Black and Hispanic teenagers on the Lower East Side who were wearing this jewelry and inspired their placement on the show. Oftentimes, Carrie Bradshaw, Sarah Jessica Parker is heralded as like popularizing the nameplate, or even in some people's minds, inventing them in some ways. She becomes known in the historiography of nameplates as like the originator, which I think is just a testament to how a race and class shape, how authorship is lended, how history gets told, who gets credit, and how nameplates are a vessel through which to see all these naughty politics. So what I'll say, and I'll then toss up to Isabel, that Sex and the City, obviously, you can't understate the influence of that show, and particularly, I think, popularizing the single-plated, very like New York style of nameplate to a mainstream, read, white, middle-class, upper-middle-class cable viewing public that maybe wasn't the audience for hip-hop, but certainly was for Sex and the City. But yeah, I think it opens up a lot of pivotal and complicated discussions around cultural ownership and authorship, power, class, and race, and ultimately how fashion and style are embedded in all of these systems.
Yeah, I mean, I think Marcel said it perfectly. The only thing I would add is that I think this links really nicely to how we started this conversation, talking about who writes history and whose stories are part of history, because, like, you know, obviously Carrie is not really an origin point for nameplate's popularity, even like maybe, as Marcel said, to a certain audience, but nameplates have been very popular always. Like, anyone who's saying nameplates are having like a comeback, they're not. Maybe within like a certain milieu or group of people in the industry, perhaps they're having like a trend moment, but nameplates are always consistently really popular and have been for decades, if not centuries. So, but I think that the fact that that moment became a like history making moment says everything about that, her body, her identity, her character, HBO as even like a media platform compared to all the aforementioned ones in what story gets told as being about where something comes from. So
Absolutely. And you actually write in the article, I think it starts that if you Google nameplate jewelry, like Carrie Bradshaw immediately came up. And this was, you know, 5 years ago. And I am pleased to say that I did Google nameplate jewelry and she was nowhere to be found. But your book came up almost immediately. So
hilarious.
Hopefully things have changed.
Dress listeners, whatever your reason for wanting to learn a new language, whether it's an upcoming international adventure, communicating with your friends and family abroad, or even professional purposes, Rosetta Stone has got you covered.
As the trusted expert in language learning for 30 years now, you can join millions of Rosetta Stone users to learn any of the 25 languages offered. That includes Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, and so many more.
And this is fast language acquisition, friends. There are no English translations, so you learn to speak, listen, and think in your new language. And right now, you can get lifetime access to all 25 of Rosetta Stone's language courses for 50% off. That's language learning for 25 languages for the rest of your life, which, Cass, is frankly amazing.
It is. And what are you waiting for, dress listeners? Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, dress listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. April, Mother's Day is just around the corner. Do you know what you are doing for your mom this year?
I sure do. This year, I'm gifting her My Life in a Book, which is this very cool service that will allow her to turn her life stories into a beautiful printed book, complete with her own photos of significant moments in her life.
Yes, this is so amazing. And dress listeners, here is how it works. So once a week, mylifeinabook.com will send your mom a question via email. And these can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then your mom can either type her response or she can use their voice to text feature. And mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book.
So join us and check out mylifeinabook.com and use the code DRESSED at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com and use the code DRESSED for 10% off today.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
And something you kind of touched on that I want to talk a little bit more, because this also comes up, I feel like, repeatedly in the book, is that wearing a nameplate can be something deeply personal, but also political. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
I think names, you know, I think that are deeply political. They place us in time and history with associations to certain ancestry and cultural identity. And oftentimes, and we're speaking in just an American context, right? But I can imagine this is relevant in other parts of the world. But if a person doesn't have a Anglophone name, or they have a name of a different phonetic structure or something that's not easy to pronounce in English, you know, oftentimes teachers or bosses will truncate them or give you a pet name or an anglicized name. And those are all really identity making and in many ways traumatic experiences for people to have your name, which is a definitive marker of your personhood and sense of belonging in the world, truncated, mispronounced, or completely just obliterated, that holds a lot of weight and significance and places people in our sort of social structure in a variety of different ways. So names are deeply significant. And nameplates is being a form of adornment that proclaims someone's name and presence and in gold for very conspicuously for everyone to see from a far distance and enshrines it in this type of valuable materials. I think it's political in the sense if we think about individualism in an American context, just being part and parcel to cultural identity in this cultural context in particular. But I think also just wearing one's name as a sign of presence and taking up space, particularly for communities or groups of people where that type of recognition and sense of importance has been systematically denied or, you know, challenged. I think nameplates can certainly be a political statement in that way. I think personally, we did most of the research for this book when I was in grad school, and the constant negotiation that I would have to make of like, do I wear my nameplate in this context? Do I wear it in that context? You know, I'm the one woman of color in this room. Do I wear this type of jewelry that in some people's eyes, like racial, puts me in sort of like a racialized last category of perception, and perhaps will I be seen differently? And that type of negotiation that I kind of had to constantly do when thinking about what I wore when I woke up in the morning and walk out of the door, those are all political decisions that are shaped by how perceived and also self-identify with the array of categories that we have to choose from, scare quotes, but often are imposed on us and in many ways, violent ways. So nameplates have been also a personal rite of passage for me to defy these stayed uptight, quote, air quote, we love the scare quote, Isabel and I, professional aesthetics, and empower myself to take up space and represent where I'm from in spaces where that may be a risky thing to do, but you only live once, right? So, hey, I decided to wear the nameplate everywhere I go.
Yeah, I don't think I have too much to add. That was really beautifully said, Marcel. I mean, like Marcel mentioned, like denial of nomenclature, that's another like sub project within this project, is such an inherent and systematic part of American history that in that sense, the nameplate fits very well as a lens into a way to look at that entire structure and story. And then I think also that dress is always political. And I'm sure that you feel this way as well as a host of a podcast about style, and like whether or not we think about it as such, it's really the only form of visual expression that I think every person consistently participates in. And whether or not you choose to actively participate in or to passively remove yourself by not engaging actively in self-fashioning, you're still participating. There's endless ways to look at and consider what that means and how it shapes people's life experiences. And I think this is just one example of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I can't say enough wonderful things about this book. And obviously, now that our listeners have listened to this episode, it's so much more than just, you know, nameplate jewelry is so much more than just a necklace, right? It's what we talk about all the time on the show, Dress Listeners, that it is embedded with meaning that we give it, and meaning that society or culture or the culture we participate in embeds in it too. So many different meanings in the clothing that we wear. And thank you both so much for being here, and you've both been so generous with your time. But before I let you go, do you have any stories from the book or this experience that you would like to share with our listeners that we have not yet covered?
Oh, yeah. I think in terms of favorite submissions that we received, the one that immediately pops to mind is a submission that we got, I think in the early days, perhaps like via our Google form, from a young woman in Minnesota who told the story of how her mom worked at a laundromat and would find pieces of scrap gold. I guess people would maybe leave earrings in their pocket or who knows. She would collect these objects and then these scraps, and then finally amassed enough scrap gold to get melted down and create her own nameplate earrings and design them. And for her, this was a really important coming of age item for herself. But unfortunately, the jeweler completely like messed up the design that she wanted. And she ended up advocating for the design that she wanted. And she said that this nameplate, aside from it being produced from the salvaged scrap metal, was also one of the first points in her life where she really asserted her wants. And I just thought that was a really, aside from the really compelling story of gold being salvaged from her mom in a laundromat, this idea that design and fashion can be this space where we assert our sense of self and assert our needs and our wants within like a power structure. Like, I'm sure she didn't want to like bother the jeweler, right? But she used it as an opportunity to practice that kind of agency. And so I think it was a really cool example of something as trivial as an earring, right? Can be a space where people really come into their own as a human being, which was really cool. So that's one story that comes to mind for me.
I mean, it's so hard to pick. I think one story that really stuck with me, and I just encourage people to find it in the book, because I can't capture the emotion in the writing from what I'm about to describe. But basically, it's written by a teenage girl in the San Fernando Valley who is describing ordering her nameplate on the weekend and then her like anguish having to wait 5 days to pick it up because she has to get a ride from her mom. And for some reason, the way she described it, like the wording just took me back so much to just the anguish of adolescence and like how huge moments like that were, like getting something new to wear, or like just these in a way like private rites of passage. And I really love that one testimony. But I think that also the other experience of making this book that I would want to share, and that I think has been received, because like I said, there's other people building on the project, is that like, if you want to do something like this, you can, especially with the digital tools that we have and the internet and the possibility to communicate with people through social media platforms. Not that social media is the end all necessarily for archiving, and like that's a whole other conversation as well, but you know, the complicatedness of these platforms themselves. But generally speaking, if one wants to like do this kind of historiography, like the literal writing of history or reshaping of history, it's so accessible now. And I just think like this has been so fulfilling for Marcel and I, and beautiful to see how it's received. And I just want to see not only more be told and created about nameplates, but about, you know, anything else that one would want to explore.
Yeah. And thank you for bringing that up, because I think that is a very powerful message that you can do history without being what the academic world would deem a historian, right? That is a clear message that comes from this book, is that let's change this idea of what an archive is and who gets to write history, right? So thank you for that message. And thank you both so much for being here. As we end this conversation, where can people follow your work? And are you still taking nameplate story submissions?
Yeah, definitely. We are on Instagram at Documenting the Nameplate, where you could find updates on events that we're doing and just get a feel for the book. And we're also still accepting submissions via DM. So please, we love to post them. We love to read them. So that's still alive and well with the project. And the book is available anywhere books are sold, basically.
Yeah. And we will definitely link to a place to purchase your book in our show notes, Dress listeners. Well, thank you both so much for being here. This has been such a wonderful conversation.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Isabel, Marcel, thank you so much for joining us all this week. Cass, I did not know this, but Isabel and Marcel actually have their very own podcast, which is called the Top Rank Podcast. And that's where they have super insightful conversations with leading thinkers in the realm of cultural politics, consumer culture, and also social justice. So we're going to link to that in our show notes, of course, as well. And we'll also put a link in for their Instagram, which is at Documenting the Nameplate. And you can also be sure and check out our Instagram at Dressed_podcast. And that's where you're going to find content connected to this week's episodes. Those will be tagged with the hashtag Dressed349 and hashtag Dressed350. And also, I would just want to emphasize, this week you are going to find a giveaway for this incredible book, The Nameplate, Jewelry, Culture, and Identity, on our Instagram feed. So stay tuned for that.
Yes, and also be sure and head over to the Dress Bookshelf at the link in our show notes, where you can purchase your very own copy of the book if you do not win our giveaway. And the Dress Bookshelf is where you can always find an array of our favorite and podcast featured fashion history titles. We love, love, love offering that to you because we get so many messages about book suggestions. So check that out. We also love hearing from you, so always please feel free to email us at hello@dresshistory.com. We do our very best to respond. It's just us two.
For now.
Yeah. Thank you for your patience. If it takes us a little bit longer to get back to you. Dresshistory.com is, of course, our website where you can find information on our upcoming fashion history tours, classes, anything else we have up our sleeves, like April's first course in the Great Designer series, which is super exciting. That is now open for registration. I think it launches the first weekend in April.
April 6th. Yes.
And if you're in New York, you should also consider joining her for Fashion History Fridays at the Met, which is a private tour of some of the pieces in the Metropolitan Museum of Art's collection that specifically have to do with thousands of years of fashion history.
Yes, it's super fun. We've done several of them now, and people are already asking for additional tours featuring different artworks. So you can expect expanded offerings coming very soon. On our website, you can also sign up for our newsletter and be the first to know about our upcoming Dressed Fashion History Tour of Paris. Hopefully, this is going to be announced in the next couple of weeks. And again, dress listeners, we are sorry this is taking a little bit longer. And that has everything to do with the fact that it's the Olympics this summer in Paris. And that's pushing all travelers out into the fall. And you know, we're doing our best at the moment to get like the best deals and the best itinerary, et cetera, et cetera. So we know it's coming soon. Just saying. I think that does it for us today, dress listeners. May you consider the significance of your name next time you get dressed.
As always, thank you so much, dress listeners, for your continued support. We could not do this without you. More dress coming your way on Tuesday. Dress, the History of Fashion is a production of Dressed Media.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.